Today, we're talking about Cade's collapse long and what it means for the Pistons and the rest of the East. And then we're checking in on teams streaking with win streaks right now and teams that are skidding, the Nuggets and the Rockets, among others. Also, are we sure expansion's a good idea? We get into all that right now with me and Tom Haverstraw. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We got a loaded episode today. Cade Cunningham injury, win streaks, losing skids, and a lot else going on around the NBA, including expansion. To discuss it all, Tom Haverstraw. Tom, how are you?
Dude, I can't be better. It's March Madness. So much good NBA to talk about. Let's go.
Yeah, so we got March Madness kicking off in 45 minutes from as we record this now, 11:30 a.m. Eastern. I'm fired up for that. Going to talk a little bit about our Final Four predictions since we both put in our brackets on Yahoo Fantasy Sports as well. So we'll talk about that later, but we got to start off with the breaking news, Tom. Cade Cunningham has suffered a collapsed lung. And so this news comes out. Sham Charania says he'll be out for an extended period of time. Later, we learn he'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks, that it's considered a mild collapsed lung. But I do think it's worth looking at some of the past injury recoveries when players have suffered collapsed lungs. Most notably, most recently, CJ McCollum back in 2023 missed 12 games and 3.5 weeks due to a collapsed lung. And then in 2021, he suffered another one, missed 18 games, 6 weeks. Terrence Jones back in 2015, 6 games, 2 weeks. Gerald Wallace back in 2009 missed 7 games over 3 weeks. So that's an average of about 3.5 weeks missed with about 10.8 games missed. So for Cade Cunningham and the Pistons, that would put him up against the end of the regular season. Your initial thoughts on this, Tom, what this means for the Pistons, what this means for Cade Cunningham?
Well, it's devastating in a number of ways. One, Cade Cunningham was having one of the best stories in the NBA. You talk about a Cinderella story of what they were 2 years ago and now leading the Eastern Conference with the number one overall seed and a guy who's going to be in the MVP conversation. And now because of this dumb 65 game rule, which was insane to begin with, now he might not even be awarded at all to at the end of the season with MVP vote, be ineligible, and also not be a part of the All-NBA team, which is absurd. I think it's one of the hallmark moments where we can finally say with certainty that this was a dumb rule. And this is kind of the nightmare scenario for the NBA, is that someone like Cade Cunningham, we're blaming this guy for having a collapsed lung for something that seems so arbitrary, that someone with 65 games versus someone with 62 or 63 games is somehow one is eligible and one is not. It's insane. And Cade Cunningham, first and foremost, of course, I wanted to have good health, and the list of previous cases certainly provides some mode of optimism for Cade Cunningham being healthy. But we already had questions about the Detroit Pistons and their shot creation outside of Cade Cunningham. And the silver lining might be that this adversity for them forces them to learn how to play when Cade Cunningham isn't off the floor. So I think there is some, you know, some light at the end of the tunnel here for the Detroit Pistons and potentially Cade Cunningham with this injury and this medical condition. But I would say this to me feels like a tipping point in the whole 65 game rule insanity. It's dumb. It was dumb from the beginning, and I've been strong about that. And I think it's even dumber now when Cade Cunningham is in jeopardy of not having his season recognized.
Look, I was somebody in support of the 65 game rule when it was first installed. This is one of the first times that I've been like, maybe we need to make a change here. Because Cade Cunningham, when we look back at this season, the Detroit Pistons as possibly the one seed, and Cade Cunningham, not on all NBA, receiving possibly zero MVP votes. And we'll see, Tom. Like, he might reach the 65 games. There's a chance of that. For what it's worth, just to make it clear for the listeners, he's played 61 games. Only 60 of those count because in the game that he suffered this collapsed lung, he played only 5 minutes. So that game doesn't count towards the 65 total. He needs to return by April 4th and play at least 20 minutes in each of those 5 games remaining for the Pistons for him to be eligible to hit 65 games, for him to be eligible for All-NBA, and to receive MVP votes. I think for Cade, this sucks, obviously, from that standpoint. It sucks that he has to deal with this. And for the Pistons, we'll see what happens here. We're going to see more Caris LeVert. We're going to see more Danis Jenkins. What's clear to me, though, Tom, is that at the least, the Pistons are possibly going to lose the one seed right now. When you look at what they've done this year with Cade and without Cade on the floor, their offensive rating just collapses. They go from a 121.9 offensive rating with Cade Cunningham on the floor to a 110.4 offensive rating with Cade off the floor. And right now, they're only 3.5 games up on the Celtics, 5 games up on the Knicks. So there's not a lot of time left, obviously. 14 games left for the Pistons, 13 for Boston, 12 for New York. The Knicks have a very easy schedule, though. But if you look game by game, I did that this morning. I see the Pistons, if they don't have Cade at all, rest of the regular season, comes back game one for the playoffs, no more regular season games, 5-9-ish, which would put them at 54 wins. Celtics, 9-4-ish, 55 wins. Knicks, 9-3-ish. So 54 wins. Bottom line here is that it's going to be close if the Cade Cunningham doesn't return for those last 5 games or last 3 or 4 or 5 games for the Detroit Pistons. And that does matter. You know, you want to have the one seed. You want to have home court the entire postseason. And so the fact he's being reevaluated in 2 weeks, the fact this is being reported as a mild lung collapse, does give me a little bit of sense of optimism that we'll see him by the end of the regular season and that the Pistons will be able to hold on to the one seed. But it's not a guarantee, and it felt like it was becoming a guarantee considering how few games are remaining at this point prior to this collapsed lung.
Right. I just think, Kevin, I don't think we should have any sort of moral hazard here of having a guy being like, hey, I don't think I'm ready to come back from my collapsed lung and I need to go and make sure I'm eligible for this 65 games. And so that's where I come in, is just like it totally backfired, this idea that we need to implement a rule that the voters already were considering how many games you played, how many minutes you played. We might have a situation here where Wemby is going to play 65 games. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to play 64, and Wemby becomes the MVP. I'm not saying he's not deserving, because he certainly has had a great season, but that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Cade Cunningham would be ineligible at the end of the day. It would just be a mockery of this intention of the rule, is to try to get guys to not rest games. It's not a rest issue. It's not a load management issue. It is these players in today's game, where there's 110 possessions every game, it's a lot more up and down, a lot more velocity, it's a lot more ballistic. And when you talk about these players who are ineligible potentially to be for MVP and All-NBA and Defensive Player of the Year, it's not a matter of I took too many rest days in the schedule. It's a matter of my body can't hold up in today's NBA. There's only 40 players right now that are eligible for the awards. 40. And I mean, it's one of these things that for the Pistons, their medical team is going to be under a lot of scrutiny and pressure to 100% clear him without any sort of liability that something might happen to him again. Look, the play happened a couple nights ago when he got basically an elbow to the back diving for a loose ball. And I'm glad that they were able to hold him out with a back injury. So it kind of gives him a little bit more time to return, right? Because that chart you gave was total time missed due to that injury. And so now we have a couple days of this. Maybe he's already kind of a few days into that rehab, and maybe it's 2.5 weeks in total. But I pointed this out on X, is that Terrence Jones, he missed 6 games, came back to the starting lineup right before the playoffs started with the Houston Rockets back in 2015, and was basically playing 30, 35 minutes like nothing happened. And so that's the hope, that for Cade Cunningham, he comes back and he's able to ramp up and he's just fine. But I just hate this idea, this moral conundrum for the medical staff to say, hey, you might need a couple more games and we're going to hold you out past April 4th. But Cade Cunningham says, no, I want to play. I want to make sure that I get my bonus. I want to make sure I'm eligible for these awards. And I just think that conundrum, that dilemma should never be part of the equation.
It's, I mean, look, it obviously is. And initially, when I liked the 65 game rule, I thought, well, good. There should be incentive to play. You shouldn't be resting all the time. It's a slap in the face of the fans. But the fact is, the inverse of it is you do have guys who might be rushing back to injury, leading to further missed time, risk of further injury. Granted, this is different. It's a medical issue with a collapsed lung. It's not like a bruised knee. It's not a hyperextension of the knee like we're going to talk about later in the show with Giannis. It's a different type of thing. This is a medical issue. But the fact is that you do have guys rushing back. And what does it matter if a guy's playing 65 games or 62 games? Because the guy who's played 62 games very well might have played significantly more minutes than the guy who played 65 games. Like, it's just the reality of it. I mean, as Sebastian said in the live YouTube chat, put a 1,900 to 2,000 minutes threshold and have players meet one or the other for criteria for them to be eligible. I think it's a good idea. Either you meet the minutes threshold or the games threshold. I understand that there still creates incentive to return, but at least there's two ways to meet it. And I think something along those lines makes some sense to me.
Why do we need a threshold? I don't understand it. Because
sometimes like voters might reward a guy who played 42 games. It can happen. And it's the type of thing where like, should that player be rewarded? I don't know. Maybe not. Clearly the NBA doesn't think so.
Yeah, I just think there's no reason to have a threshold because it's already a factor in your voting. Like, what are we? It's insulting to the voters, really, that you have to have a threshold because it means that we don't look at these things. We don't look at games played. We don't look at minutes played. Of course we do. Of course we look at all that in order to do the whole measuring stick of all the different players. And so for me, it's just it's too clever by half. It's like, oh, maybe we lower the threshold to 60 games or 55. We are so far behind in the medical side of this game. We're so far behind. The players used to, just 5 years ago, they were playing 80% of the games, 85% of the games. Now it's 65% with this new rule. Kevin, is it solving anything? No, it's not. It's creating a solution to a problem we didn't have, is that the players are not resting more and having more load management. They're injured more. And I think the more that we play this 110 possession game where it's up and down, a lot of fast breaks, more closeouts than ever, we're going to see injuries pile up. And I don't think you should wrongfully, unfairly penalize the players who are just trying to go out there and be as healthy as possible. I think any threshold makes no sense to me. And I think I appreciate Sebastian's suggestion that we do it minutes. Minutes makes more sense than game totals, but I still think there's no reason to have a threshold at all.
If Adam Silver came out today and said, you know what, we're getting rid of the threshold, no more 65 game limit, that's changing right now today, I don't think anybody would really care. I don't think there would be a backlash against it. I think it would be completely accepted by the public. I'm sure there'd be a little bit of pushback in some circles, but ultimately, I think it would be something that Silver could decide to do today and take advantage of the opportunity if he does actually want to do that.
The crazy thing is that the players' union agreed to this. That may be the most mind-numbing part of this whole thing, is that I think it wrongfully cast the players in a bad light, that they don't care enough, they don't want to play, that they're actually just resting and they're kicking their feet up, when in reality, these bodies are breaking down. You know, like, we're talking about a collapsed lung here as the reason why Cade Cunningham and his incredible season is potentially going to be lost to the history books, and he won't be eligible for bonuses and all this. It's not a matter of he was just taking games off for load management. And for the Pistons' sake, like, they've basically ensured that if any tie happens in the standings with the Celtics and with the Knicks, they have the tiebreaker. Thankfully, they've played enough games and won enough games that if it does come down to a tiebreaker, they do hold the tiebreaker over Boston and over the Knicks. So that's sealed. This is going to be an exciting finish to the season in the East at the top, with Jason Tatum coming back and the New York Knicks trying to figure out who they are. But the Detroit Pistons, they've got a leg up on these next two teams here, Boston and the Knicks, by virtue of having that tiebreaker over them. And that's going to become important as we get down to the last few games of the season.
It certainly will be. And we'll see if Cade Cunningham does come back. Hopefully he's able to before the end of the regular season. And hopefully he gets the 65 games. So this isn't even a controversy when it comes time to vote. All right. So that, obviously Cade's injury is a big deal for him, a big deal for the Pistons. And that's kind of be our theme today. Big deal or no big deal. And we're going to go through some teams that are winning, some teams that are losing, some other topics, and decide whether it's a big deal or no big deal. Starting out with the Atlanta Hawks, they have extended their win streak to 11 games. Longest win streak in the NBA right now. The longest win streak they've had since the 2014-15 season, when they were a 60-plus win team and they were the one seed in the Eastern Conference, got all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. They moved up to a tie for seventh place in the Eastern Conference. They're a game and a half back from the Raptors for the five seed. And over the stretch, they have a plus 17.2 net rating, the number one record in the league, number one defensive rating, number two offensive rating. Tom, I do got to say, though, I don't think the streak is that big of a deal, because they got two okay wins. They beat the Bucks with Giannis, and they beat the Magic. Other than that, they've beat the Nets twice, the Wizards twice, the Mavericks twice, tanking teams. They have unimpressive wins. The Sixers without Embiid, the Bucks without Giannis, the Blazers without Denny. Like, I admire the way the Hawks are playing. Nikhil Alexander-Walker thriving on and off ball. CJ McCollum screening and the movement. Everything is what you wish Trae Young would have been for this Quinn Snyder half-court Hawks offense. And then defensively, Dyson Daniels looking like his all-defensive player self, and Jonathan Kuminga playing with athleticism, and Jalen Johnson continuing in his all-NBA case. They look good. I'm not taking that away from them. But the win streak itself, they've had two impressive wins. And that's it of the 11. And I'd go as far to say, Tom, that I wouldn't be surprised if they finish under 500 the remainder of the season. They have 13 games left. They face Boston and Cleveland twice each. They face Detroit without Cade now, New York and Miami, Orlando and Houston. I could see them losing seven of those 13. So I'm not overreacting to the Hawks here. It's nice that they're having this run. It's nice they're playing with the style that they are, but they really haven't beaten anybody. So I'm saying no big deal. What about you with the Hawks?
Yeah. Today's big number is 203. Over the 11 game win streak, the collective win percentage of the teams that they beat is 30%. Wow. And that means that over the last 11 games, the collective win percentage is 203 games under 500. I'm going to repeat that.
Oh my
The teams that God. They've beaten over this streak are a collective 203 games under 500. So it's just, it's a small deal. It's not a big deal. Hats off to the Atlanta Hawks. But like you said, they beat the Wizards twice. They beat the Mavericks twice. They beat the Brooklyn Nets twice. The Brooklyn Nets were down 78 points by halftime last night to OKC. It's just, I can't get excited over this Atlanta Hawks team that is so mid that they are on an 11-game win streak, but they barely moved in the standings. And like you said, the rest of the year, would anyone be surprised if they, you know, were a losing team the rest of the year? No. I think it's great that with Jonathan Kuminga, they kind of reset the season and had this really soft schedule. But I would venture to say this is the least impressive 11-game win streak since I've been covering the league. Look at these teams. And I cover the Trailblazers. And they blew out the Trailblazers without Denny Avdia. I get it. But, like, look at these other teams. This is kind of the thing. What we talk about when tanking happens, how this can dilute the product, and it's this. It's the Hawks can win 11 straight games, and both of us are like, meh, look at the teams they played.
I know. It's a shame that that's the reaction. It really is. But it's just my genuine feelings. It's your genuine feelings about this. They've beaten a bunch of teams that are trying to lose. That's just the reality of it. There's teams that want to lose. And it's like the Heat or Spo said weeks back when they lost to a tanking team, we have to beat these teams that are trying to lose. Well, yeah. The Hawks have done that. So good for them doing that. And like I said, I'm unimpressed by the streak, But I am impressed by the way they're playing. I mean, like, I feel like you can hold both of those beliefs at the same time. I like the motion they're playing with on offense. I love the defensive intensity. I love Onyeka Okongwu continuing to thrive as a center for this team. He's a guy that I loved before the draft. He came into the league without much of a perimeter game, developed a mid-range jumper, developed a low-volume spot-up three, and now he's taken over five threes a game and making almost 40% of them. I mean, like, they have some great player developmental stories on that team, and they're getting contributions from veterans and young guys. It's a fun team. So, like, don't get me wrong, Hawks fans that are listening or watching this podcast, but ultimately, I want to see them beat some actual teams, and they got some tests. Boston twice, Cleveland twice, like I said, New York, Miami, Orlando again, Houston. They face in their next game, Houston. We'll talk about them in a little bit, but ultimately, man, like, if they start winning those and continue playing with the style that they are, well, hey, the conversation will be a lot different moving forward with the Atlanta Hawks, and we'll definitely touch base again if they start winning some of those games, because I would love to eat my own words with the Atlanta Hawks and their 11-game win streak. And we'll be right back after this break. One game behind them in the win streak column is the Oklahoma City Thunder, Tom. They have won 10 games in a row. They've got some impressive wins. They beat the Nuggets twice, beat the Knicks, the Celtics, the Wolves. Last night, their win against the Brooklyn Nets, not so impressive, but it was impressive. They held the Nets to 24 points in the first half. 24 points in the first half? You gotta be kidding me.
In today's economy?
that's really hard to pull off, even if you're tanking games and you have a G League roster in Brooklyn. That is hard to pull off. So I want to ask you, Tom, because I know you've had San Antonio ahead of OKC in your rankings for the championship. Jalen Williams hasn't played since February 11th. McCain drops 26 points against the Nets. That's his fourth time in 18 games with 20 points or more for the Thunder. He only did it once all year with the Sixers. AJ Mitchell's back. He's thriving. He looks good in their starting lineup in place of J-Dub right now. The Thunder are getting healthy besides Jalen Williams. Is this recent OKC win streak without J-Dub a big deal to you?
It is a big deal, especially because Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's back. And when I said that San Antonio, I'm putting them ahead of the Oklahoma City Thunder, is because we didn't know yet the status of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander coming back from that abdominal strain. And so now I think I've seen enough Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to see that he's fine. And the J-Dub thing is real, is that you're going to need J-Dub in the playoffs, maybe not in the 82-game season, but in the playoffs, you need as many horses as you can. So they're going to need him back, certainly against the San Antonio Spurs. If there's no J-Dub, I'm still taking the Spurs in that series. And they played really well against, you know, the rest of the NBA, the Thunder. Jared McCain addition certainly changes the calculus for me, that they have no J-Dub, but they do have this guy who, if he made four more baskets and one more free throw, he would be in the 50-40-90 club for the Thunder. 50-40-90 for the Thunder for basically nothing with the 76ers. And God, I hope Josh Harris is happy that they ducked the tax, that Daryl Morey ducked the tax for him, because the fact that they just gave him away for free is insane. That the Thunder were able to get Jared McCain, looking like pre-injury, pre-meniscus injury Jared McCain, for basically peanuts, is nuts to me. So for me, yes, I did say that the San Antonio Spurs, without Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the question mark around his injury, that I would put them ahead of OKC. Right now, it's probably more like a tie. And if there's no J-Dub in a seven-game series, I'm taking the Spurs, man.
So Donut Eyes in the chat on YouTube said, can OKC win the title without J-Dub? Not 100%. You're saying that they won't win the title if he's not playing. But what if he's 80%? 75%. Because I would say, yes, they can win the title with J-Dub just three quarters as great as he was last year. I don't think they need full strength 100% J-Dub to win the championship. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and hamstrings, it might be 75%. You know, when you're dealing with that sort of injury, you saw Aaron Gordon last year where it was just like, yeah, he was out there, but it's just not necessarily the same guy. And for J-Dub, a lot of his excellence is in that open transition game. And so if he is limited in any way, he doesn't have his wheels, it is going to be about 75%. But yeah, to Donut Eyes. I'd love to know the story behind that username. But but I do think that when you look at the Thunder, they've got so many guys that can really carry you in the regular season. But in the postseason, man, it's hard for me to envision them getting past the San Antonio Spurs without him being 100%.
Yeah, I think it's fair, but I still have my hesitations about the Spurs in a playoff context until they prove it, just like with the Thunder. They had to prove it. Ultimately, I do think like that Jared McCain acquisition, as you said, Tom, we've talked about that a bunch already. It just continues to feel worse for Philly, and it continues to feel better for the Thunder. Just like he is just a perfect fit. It's seamless. It's like he's been there all year long already. That's what it looks like watching Jared McCain on the Thunder, with the movement off ball and just the flow he brings and the crispness of his actions and handoffs. Did you see his quote after, I think it was a practice earlier this week, where he was talking about the two-man actions with Isaiah Hartenstein, like taking dribble handoffs from him and slingshotting around, driving to the rim or taking a three-pointer? And he's like, I remember watching Tyrese Maxey do that with Joel Embiid. I used to be like, well, that must be fun. I don't think he meant it as a shot at Nick Nurse. I highly doubt he did, but it sure felt like it because it's the damn truth. How did Nick Nurse use Maxey in that way for Philadelphia and then just discard McCain in the rotation and not see the potential there? It boggles my mind. And then he goes to Mark Daigneault and the Thunder, and they have 100 guards on their roster. And they're like, oh yeah, we got space for you. We figured out a role. Day one, it looked like he was there all year. And now we're 18 games in, it looks even better. And I know it's just the Brooklyn Nets, but he's done this against good teams too. We've seen him have clutch moments down the stretch of games too. And I'm telling you, man, he's going to have a big moment in the playoffs. He's going to have a big moment. He's going to hit a clutch three. He's going to have a sequence where he gets a steal and makes a great pass, whatever it is. And that's going to be one of those moments that Sixers fans are watching those games and they just turn off their TV because they're sick of it. They just can't stand it anymore. They can't stand it anymore. That's what's going to happen to Philadelphia.
Yeah, I feel so bad for Sixers fans because he was like, thank God for VJ Edgecombe in the same way that Cooper Flagg was delivered out of the sky for Dallas Mavericks fans to heal those wounds from the Luka Doncic trade. I feel the same thing about VJ Edgecombe because without him, I know Tyrese Maxey is their guy, but I got to imagine it feels very soothing to know that, all right, we got rid of Jared McCain, but at least we have VJ, right? At least we got VJ Max still out on the floor for us because, well, Tyrese obviously is hurt now, but the idea is, all right, at least we got VJ. Now, the thing about OKC, though, Kev, so Wednesday night, we had the Pacers game, the Blazers. We had the Pacers game, and I was prepping for it, and I looked up the Pacers and the Thunder are top four in player games lost due to injury, according to SpotTrack.com. Those are the two finals teams, right? They go deep into the postseason, and they have two of the most injury-ravaged rosters in the league. I don't think it's a large enough sample size to say that the finals run is so grinding in today's NBA with the fast-paced nature and the three-point shot and how grueling it is with the style of play and how violent the game is from a soft tissue standpoint. But I think it's notable that OKC is second in the NBA in player games lost due to injury, and they're still the number one seed in the Western Conference, which the other team, the Indiana Pacers, are in last in their conference. It really is an incredible story about culture, about resilience, perseverance from the top on down with the Thunder, that they've suffered the second most injuries in the NBA, and still they're 55-15 down. I mean, 55-15 with basically no J-Dub this season. Hartenstein's been out half the year. And if you look at it, there's only one real All-NBA I did this. You know what, Kev? I'll just do it right here. I did the All-NBA team with players that are eligible right now. You want to hear this real quick? Cason Wallace.
Yeah, let's hear it. Let's go.
Cason Wallace is the only one who's eligible on the Thunder that would be in the conversation to be All-NBA. Yeah. Cason Wallace would be second team on my list. First team All-NBA right now with players that are eligible, at least 15 minutes played in 65 games or more. Just get ready for Peyton Pritchard going to be an All-NBA player. All right, First team, I've got Derek White, Carl Anthony Towns, Kevin Durant, Julius Randle, and Scottie Barnes. That's what we're looking at for first team All NBA right now. Second team, Cason Wallace, Colin Knipl, Desmond Bane, Brandon Ingram, and Rudy Gobert. Okay? Hey, this is the 65 game rule you want.
You're speaking my language, Tom. Rudy Gobert and Colin Knipl. Let's go.
Let's go. Second team. Third team All NBA. Modest Muzelis, Amen Thompson, Nikhil Alexander Walker, Peyton Pritchard, and Mikal Bridges. Those are your All NBA team members if the season ended today. And of course, as Jalen Brunson potentially gets over this ankle injury, we might change a couple of those slots. But right now, there's only one player from last year's All-NBA team that is eligible. As we sit here today with a couple weeks left in the season, Carl Anthony Towns is the only one eligible. And guys like Cason Wallace are going to have a claim to All-NBA, or guys like Nikhil Alexander Walker, if the stars don't get healthier as we go forward with the stretch run and they don't rest ahead of the playoffs. We're going to be looking at guys like Bezelis, Nikhil Alexander Walker, Peyton Pritchard being in the All-NBA conversation. And it is a testament to Mark Daigneault and this team that they basically have had only one guy eligible for the All-NBA awards, and they're still just beating down the doors on everybody.
I want to just quickly touch on one thing you talked about, the Thunder in first and NBA standings, the Pacers in last. Last time I checked, Tyrese Halliburton is not Michael Jordan. He's not LeBron James. He's not Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell. He's a very good player. The Pacers have mastered the art of tanking. It's as simple as that. That's why they are in last place. Rick Carlisle deserves all the credit in the world for realizing that early and just leading this perfect tank. So congratulations to Rick Carlisle on that one. Really quickly, I want to check in on NBA MVP with my current top five, because we're talking about injuries. We're talking about absences. This assumes Cade doesn't reach the 65-game threshold when we look at this top five right now. I have SGA number one. I think he is clearly in that number one spot. I will not rule out, perhaps, that Wemby or Luka could move up. We have Luka trending up right now. Jokic trending down. Luka could end up one, two, three. He's playing his best basketball of the year, maybe ever. I have Jaylen Brown in the fifth spot right now with this top five. Do you have any disagreements with these five right here, Tom, whether it's the order or the inclusions?
I think I looked this up earlier. I think Shea is like minus 1200 to win MVP at this point.
I saw that. That's too much of a favorite. That's too much of a favorite. But I think that changed, if I remember correctly. I think that was like a one day thing, and then it reverted back to something else.
I don't know. Correctly. We'd have to look at BetMGM at this point.
He still is just as heavy as a favorite, which I think is outrageous. I think SGA is going to win it. He's got the number one spot on my ballot right now, but I'm not ruling out Victor or Luka. It's very possible one of those guys ends up winning the award, especially given the way that they're playing right now. And Luka, especially. I mean, Lakers have won seven games in a row, Tom. Lakers have won seven in a row. They beat the Knicks, the Wolves, the Nuggets, the Rockets two games in a row. And Luka over this stretch, averaging 38.1 points per game on 63.4% true shooting, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 assists, 1 block, 40% from 3. You have LeBron defying his age, 30 points on 13 of 14, playing a lot off ball. Lakers are playing their best defense. DeAndre Ayton has accepted, "I'm not that guy," is what he said. "I'm not that guy," in a celebratory way, knowing I'm going to rim run and play hard. Marcus Smart looks back. The Lakers have won seven in a row. Is this Lakers streak a big deal or no big deal?
Big deal, for sure. Big deal, considering that LeBron James, in addition to Luka just taking off and being the most complete Luka we have ever seen, LeBron James is also recognize that he's not prime LeBron James anymore. He is a guy that after that Orlando loss, in which he had that hand grenade tossed to him by Luka, it seems like they stratified and clarified their roles, where LeBron James has now played 8 straight games without having more than 15 field goal attempts. It's twice as long as the longest streak in his career. of having 15 or fewer field goal attempts. He has understood this is Luka's team. And I think that's a huge deal because there's no longer taking turns or trying to figure out who's the alpha on this team and who deserves to take the last second shot, all this stuff. I covered that 2011 Miami Heat team. It matters to these guys who is the alpha in that locker room. And I think it's pretty clear that after that loss, either they had a discussion or they had an understanding that it has to be Luka's team because he's ready to take the reins as I am unquestionably the guy, not just now, but for the future. And ever since that delineation has happened, it's just like unlocked everything. Not just DeAndre Ayton, but check back next week on DA. LeBron.
You're really right about that, Tom. You do have to look back week to week. Next week, he might think he's a superstar again. So we'll check back on it. Yeah. Sorry, continue.
But I think this is real. And I think Marcus Smart has unlocked a little bit for them. And just being that defensive guy, that pest that has that kind of deep playoff run and that veteran poise, and he's looking healthy again. I like all that. But I think it's almost underrated how much LeBron James has taken a back seat and understood my best influence on this game is those hustle plays, role player plays. The role player should be his nickname right now in the best way possible. I want to give you a stat here about LeBron that just blew my mind this morning when I was looking at it, because how many of those dunks did he have that were in transition or he was getting out after a steal and he was getting out in a fast break and finishing on the move where it's much easier for LeBron to do that, right, than scoring in the half court and being more quick first step than his opponent defending him. Here's the stat. In 2026, LeBron James at 41 years old in the month of March is leading the NBA in fast break points.
Wow.
LeBron James at 41 years old is leading the NBA in fast break points, which is absurd. The fact that this guy, we was dealing with sciatica and was out for a month to start the season, and we were all ready. I'm guilty of it, being like, this is it. He's going to be limited. He's not going to be the same player. And this is the last season of good LeBron. And we were so like, or last season was the last season of good LeBron. And he's rewritten what he wants to be at this stage. And I think this game, that Orlando Magic game, I think it really turned things where they understand that LeBron being a role player, he hasn't had more than 15 shots in like a month, basically. And I think this is the right role for him where he's hustling, he's getting out in transition. Luka is playing defense again. I just feel like JJ Redick, credit to him, he's figured out a way to get the most out of LeBron, Luka, and Austin Reeves with them on the floor, which was a really critically poor point for them about a month ago. But over the last month, everything's clicked into place, and it's been great to see.
So this season, LeBron James is scoring a career-low amount of his points on self-created chances, which means it's a career high of assisted opportunities. Since he came back from injury the last time around on March 12th, 47% of his shots have been self-created. So he has fallen below the 50% mark where over half of his shots are being created for him. And it's leading to absurd levels of efficiency. He's shooting the ball better. Obviously, as we saw against the Rockets, getting lob opportunities on the break. He's accepted it, and you got to give credit to LeBron James for doing that. Got to give credit to Luka Doncic for stepping up defensively, as Kelly Eco wrote about in depth on Yahoo Sports this week, and the Dunker Spot talked about on their podcast as well, the diving into the Lakers. Got a lot of Lakers coverage, obviously, and with Luka playing at this level the last seven games, dude, some of the shots he was hitting down the stretch against the Rockets, those last 4 or 5 minutes, the dude just like it's not just easy open shots. Those are heavily contested step back opportunities. I like Lakers fans this morning. I wake up. I didn't watch the game live last night. I'm sound asleep in bed. I wake up and I pull out my phone. I look on X and it's just like a bunch of Lakers fans saying, "Don't you enjoy watching Luka? Don't you enjoy watching Luka?" Responding to my All-Star Weekend podcast where I asked Dumb and Rangula, a hardcore Laker fan, "Do you like watching Luka?" Because, I mean, it was in the middle of a down stretch for the Lakers. I was just curious. This is a guy who's watched Kobe Bryant and LeBron James and grew up with some legendary players and watched them all through the years. Do you like watching Luka? It's a totally different style compared to what you're used to. And it was like a, it's different. That was the response. It's different than what I'm used to. But yes, you enjoy watching this version of Luka if you are a Laker fan. You very much love watching this version of Luka because he has never looked better than he does right now. So yes, it is a very big deal. Yeah. The Lakers are definitely on track to be the 3 seed. Nick Wright went through it today on X. He made a post about how if they sweep their 5 games against the Tankers, the Pacers, Wizards, Nets, Mavericks, and Jazz, and then go just 2-6 in their other 8 games, that's going to put them at 51 wins, which means the Rockets would have to go 11-3, the Nuggets would have to go 10-4, the Wolves would have to go 9-3 to catch them. Odds are the Lakers are going to be the 3 seed, and it's in part because of this surge we've seen now, and odds are they're going to be even better than that to close the year. So it's looking like we're going to have OKC 1, San Antonio 2, Lakers 3, and then it's just a matter of how it shakes out after that. The Wolves right now without Ant, the Rockets looking ugly, the Nuggets looking ugly. Might as well talk about one of those teams right now, Tom, with Houston, because they lose both games against LA. They're 0-4 in the West ever since the All-Star break, 0-4 against the top 6 in the West. They've lost against the Spurs, the Nuggets, and twice against the Lakers by an average score of 125-105. They're getting roasted by the best in the Western Conference. Is this recent Rockets skid a big deal?
Yeah, it's a huge deal. I never thought, so I wrote on Tom the Finder about how important Steven Adams, he was the most important player on this team when he went out with his injury. I had no idea it would be this important. Like, they've completely lost their identity. They used to play bully ball, and now it's not nearly that. It's a different word that I would describe how they've been playing defensively, and just their identity has not been nearly to the extent of what their identity was. Or they're searching. They're absolutely searching. And Tari Eason, dude, he's 0 for his last 21 from 3. Right? This team was already starved for three-point production. And it's just the Kevin Durant show. Every time down the floor, they have no other reliable scores. And really, it shouldn't be that Reed Shepard, a second-year guy, 21-year-old Reed Shepard, is the swing factor for this Houston Rockets team. But Amen Thompson can't create. Jabari Smith can't create. And they are looking completely overmatched against these teams. It's a huge problem. And look, it's a team that I think when Luka Doncic is just way more energized and locked in defensively than your team, it's a statement. Like when Luka missed that three late in the game and then ran down and stepped in for a charge that was deemed a blocking foul because he didn't get there in time on Alperen Şengün, I was like, Luka doing that? How many guys on the Rockets are doing something like that? And it's Luka, the guy we've been dogging on all season for not giving those kind of efforts defensively. And for me, it just looks like this Houston Rockets team is going by way of the other Kevin Durant-led teams where it's just they don't look like they like each other right now. It looks like they completely don't have the chemistry that we saw in the first month of the season. And is Steven Adams really that much of an influencer on this team that he's got that kind of impact on the locker room and on the floor to the team identity that without this guy, they look like they're completely lost? And so for me, Kevin, it's a very big deal that they're getting blown out by their peers because it seems like this is a lost season for the Houston Rockets, Kev. It really feels like this first opening season for Kevin Durant, it looks like a completely lost season, and Steven Adams and Fred VanVleet being injured is a huge part of this, but they cannot be so big on this team's identity that right now they're just not a good team.
The thing that sticks out to me, and first of all, I said like 2-3 weeks ago the season was over for Houston, so nothing new there.
You're right.
Like in terms of me feeling like this is a big deal, right? I felt like it was a big deal then. It's definitely a big deal now. The season's over. That's more than obvious for the Houston Rockets. I don't care that they are 41-27, the 5 seed, still have a chance at the 4 seed. Season is over. This team has no chance at winning the NBA championship, and that's what they set out to do at the start of the year. That's what they set out to do after they got Kevin Durant. What stuck out to me in this game, Tom, on top of everything else you're talking about, Kevin Durant in that fourth quarter, He plays seven minutes and 52 seconds. He took only two shots. He had one turnover, and he only had 15 touches. And so do you see how anemic this offense is with KD in endgame situations and definitely without Kevin Durant in endgame situations? But the lack of opportunities for him to score, the lack of touches, the lack of aggression, he only got double teamed on one of those 15 touches. It's not like they were forcing the ball out of his hands to somebody else the entire fourth quarter. It was just passive, looked like a lack of care to me, and it's just an odd, very odd, strange situation that we saw in that game last night with KD taking only two shots in almost 8 minutes when he's the source of offense. I'm just kind of baffled by it. Why do you think that happened? What stuck out to you?
He's 37 years old and he's been having to carry this load. I mean, that's what it felt like to me is that Kevin Durant. And this,
what it was? Just fatigue, Tom?
I think he's checked out. Like, I think he's just like, man, I know this team doesn't have it. And I've been double teamed nonstop over the past month. And maybe he's trying to make a statement, but I think just emotionally, physically, I don't see how Kevin Durant at 37 years old can be expected to carry this team down the stretch in the same way that we're like, hey, LeBron can do this. But most times you're either injured like Stephen Curry is at this point of your career. You cannot be considered to carry this team every time down the floor. So yeah, I'm giving him a little bit of grace here, just saying maybe we're a little too spoiled to think that a 37-year-old Kevin Durant should be able to play 40 minutes a night carrying an offense every single night when they had back-to-backs for like the first half of the season. And now the schedule crunch is getting at them, and I do think that they've been shorthanded. I'm giving him a pass on last night. Look, he's Kevin Durant. He's one of the 10 best players of all time. But at this point, I feel bad for the guy because he signed up for this technically. No.
He did sign up for it, Tom. He's made mistake after mistake. Even signing with the Warriors was a mistake because he went to a team that won 73 games and just had a 3-1 comeback against your own team. And you know going into that situation, even if you win championships, even if you play as magnificently as he did, he was unbelievable in those finals, playing the five, doing everything. He played the best basketball of his entire career. You even know if that's going to happen, people are going to take that away from you. When you choose to go to a 73-win team that a 3-1 comeback against you. It's been mistake after mistake after mistake ever since he left Oklahoma City for Golden State. Going to Brooklyn, going to Phoenix, going to Houston, when other opportunities are out there, it's been mistake after mistake. And that's why we're in this situation here with him. So yes, you feel a little bad that this situation is here for him, but he chose this path. He chose to go this route. And so it ultimately, he has to take some responsibility here. And I'm not going to feel bad. I don't feel bad. I've enjoyed watching KD, unbelievable player, but he chose this path ever since he left OKC for Golden State.
Yeah, it's a good point. And it looks like they're going to not reach their over-under, preseason over-under once again. And so underperforming team certainly dealt with injuries. But then again, if you look at how many games they've had, Kevin Durant, obviously, but they've also had their core guys when it comes to Jabari Smith, or whether it's Alperen Şengün has missed a couple games here earlier. But like this team, this second half swoon is crazy, especially when you consider that Amen Thompson, I think many people thought he was going to be most improved player this year or making the leap. It hasn't happened next to Kevin Durant. They've played 65 games together. And if you had told me that they'd have Amen Thompson, Kevin Durant, Jabari Smith, Shepard, Şengün, like for as many games as they've had, I would say they would have a better record than they do right now. But right now, the over-under was at 52.5 for this Houston Rockets team. And with those players being there, I think they fall short of that. Once again, another Kevin Durant team underperforming in the regular season.
Yeah. I don't feel bad one bit. For KD. Sorry. I don't at all. And I know maybe this team should be better. They've had injuries, but KD chose this route. And it's going to be a big offseason for Houston once it comes. Do they keep Udoka? What do they do? How can you rely on Steven Adams? Do you upgrade over Fred VanVleet? What do you do with the young guys? A lot of big questions facing the Houston Rockets this offseason once it does come, once they inevitably do lose in the postseason. On Wednesday night, one of the more shocking results. We got a lot of blowouts, a lot of no surprises. We'll be right back. The Nuggets lost to the tanking Grizzlies. Denver was 31-15 in the three seed back on January 23rd. They're now 42-28. They've fallen to sixth place. They're only 2.5 games up on Phoenix, the seventh seed. They're 11-13 since their fast start, even with Jokic missing time. This Nuggets skid feels like a massive deal to me watching them play. They just can't seem to get right. Aaron Gordon did miss this game against Memphis. Aaron Gordon feels like the heartbeat of this roster. They feel like they are way better defensively with him out there. They seem lost without him defensively. And then offensively as well. Jokic in this game against Memphis, just lack of energy, sloppy passes and turnovers. He looked like he was coasting in this game, and it's not often you blame Jokic for issues with the Nuggets, but I thought that loss against the Grizzlies was in a big part on him in the lack of a tone. He did not set a tone in that game. That was not MVP-level stuff by Jokic to stomp out a team trying to lose. Instead, he positioned them in a place where they did blow that game, and they did indeed lose it. So Jokic has to be better, especially in the first half of that game. 10 turnovers. For Jokic, just inexcusable on many of those occasions too.
Dude, and if you watch those 10 turnovers, almost all of them were unforced errors. And they were live ball turnovers, the worst kind. It was, he's just like lackadaisically like doing a behind the back pass at half court and just like not really paying attention, throwing the ball. Is something wrong with Jokic? Like, it feels like something is up because he just looks either mentally checked out or physically he looks like he's limited. Because I can't remember a time where he averaged 5 turnovers for a month, and that's what he's doing here in the month of March. It just seems like he's off. And maybe he came back a little too early from that hyperextended knee, and he's still going through it. But a lot of this, you're right, sloppy turnovers where he's just like whipping it into the 10th row. And it's just like, what are you seeing? Like, a lot of the sorcery passes that he had and that Luka Doncic had on Wednesday night, you're like, how did he see that, right? But in this game against a Memphis Grizzlies team that is trying to lose, that, yeah, Ty Jerome was playing, but I think they're like 3-12 with Ty Jerome this season. So it's not like they got back prime Michael Jordan in that game. It's just the Nuggets are, they haven't had a 3-game win streak with Jokic since before Christmas. They haven't had a 3-game win streak since January 18th. And the team, there are like 9 teams in the NBA that haven't had a 3-game win streak over that span. And it's all the tanking teams. It's Golden State without Steph. And it's the Denver Nuggets with Jokic. They haven't had a sustained run here in the second half of the season. And at some point, you got to question whether Jokic, with all the injuries to Christian Brown, and he's been playing well as of late, but with Aaron Gordon being out, Cam Johnson's playing well, better. But something doesn't look right with Nikola Jokic, and it's very concerning to me.
Yeah, 100% something doesn't look right with him. And look, I had Aaron Gordon on my podcast last week. If you didn't hear that conversation, we dove into his improvement as a player, his mindset, and a bunch of other stuff. But like, Gordon, to me, early in the season when the Nuggets were thriving, I said he's an all-star, like early December, whenever it was before we got hurt. I said Aaron Gordon looks like an all-star so far this season, early on. He's looked like an all-star since he returned as well. But the fact is they can't be so solely reliant on Aaron Gordon to look competent on both ends of the floor. It can't be that way. They have to thrive without a guy like that. And Jokic, having this, the month that he's had, I agree with you, Tom, something just doesn't look quite right with him. I do wonder if maybe we'll learn more about injury he's playing through or something like that, because it's not just the sloppy passes. Defensively, he's not what he was earlier in the year or in recent years either. So there's something going on there with Jokic that I'm sure we're going to learn a lot more about. But the 10 turnovers, that's terrible, especially as sloppy as a lot of those were. So, you know, you're looking at the Western Conference right now. As we said earlier, it's looking like it'll be OKC, San Antonio, Lakers. Ant out right now. Houston skid. Nuggets skid. Like, there's a chance here for Phoenix to move up. Possibly, granted, they've lost three in a row. They do have a window here. They're only 3.5 back from Minnesota for the 4 seed. There's an opportunity for them to climb. If Houston or Denver, whoever it is that wins that first round matchup, if it's the Spurs or the Lakers, if the Clippers are the 7 seed, if they win in the play-in, they're going to be a tough matchup in the first round for their opponent. Who knows? Maybe they upset the 2 seed Spurs, and maybe they're facing the Lakers or in a series against Lakers Clippers in the second round, or the Nuggets or the Wolves or the Suns. Who knows? Like, the Clippers have a path here. Bottom line I'm getting to here is Minnesota, Houston, Denver all look vulnerable, and so the window is suddenly a little bit open for the Clippers, a little bit open, more open for the Spurs and the Thunder as well up top. And suddenly for the Lakers, as we talked about earlier, they're looking like they're in a tier of their own right now, below the Thunder, below the Spurs, and above everybody else in the Western Conference. So things are starting to take some shape here in the West with those standings here, with what we're looking at. Very interesting, Tom, down the stretch here. And I think there's a quick little piece of news here. I don't buy it entirely. But Shams Charania did say there's some optimism that Stephen Curry will be able to return by the end of March. We'll see if that happens. Yeah, you did say the Warriors are one-star contenders on your list. So yeah, I guess you're not taking them off just yet, are you? So.
Well, I will say that in my latest, I did take them off. So okay, this Monday, I did pull the Golden State Warriors.
You can put them back next week. Put them back.
Sure.
Don't do it. They're done no matter what. He shouldn't come back. Steph should stay and get healthy for next year in Charlotte.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, Steve Kerr said it after the game. He's like, we're locked into the play-in, you know? We're going to be in the play-in. And the Memphis – watch out, Memphis Grizzlies. They beat the Denver Nuggets. Watch out. Memphis is coming. I think they're like 9 games back of the 10 slot. Yeah, they're going to be in – the Warriors are going to be in that 10 spot. And the Blazers, yeah, we're scoreboard watching right now on the Blazers crew because it's the Clippers, too. They lost. They were up 18. Yeah. Against the Pelicans early, and they blew that game. The Pelicans look sneaky good ever since DeJounte Murray came back. James Borrego's doing a hell of a job coaching that team. Obviously, they don't have their pick this year, so they're motivated to win every single game rather than pulling their guys. But another big win for them against the Clippers. And the Blazers, they took care of business against the Pacers. It got a little hairy there at the end. But Phoenix, they have an opportunity here without Dylan Brooks. They have some work to do, but the Western Conference, Kev, dare I say, might be a little overrated now. I know we just got the Cade Cunningham news, but outside of OKC and San Antonio and the Lakers, I know those are 3 teams, but everyone after that, I kind of feel like the Eastern Conference might be better top to bottom. And when we look at the dominance of the Western Conference, yeah, I would say the Spurs and OKC are the best teams in the NBA right now. And the Lakers have been really hot lately. But 4 through 10 in the Western Conference, I think the East is better. And I don't know. It just feels like to me that the Western Conference, I wrote about it after the season, is how after last season that LeBron should go East. He should go to Cleveland because it's going to be an easy path to getting to the NBA Finals. To go East because it's going to be so imbalanced this year, but that's really not been the case. It's been pretty even. And I would venture to say that with all the injuries now, I don't know. Am I scared if I'm facing the Minnesota Timberwolves or the Houston Rockets or Denver right now? I don't think so. It's a wide open Western Conference race after the top three.
It is wide open after the top three, but that top three is so strong. I'm still taking the West over the Eastern Conference. Speaking of the Eastern Conference, Giannis, he hyperextended his knee and suffered a bone bruise on March 15th. There was reporting yesterday from The Athletic that the Bucks want to shut down Giannis, and they're out of the play-in race. They want to optimize their lottery positioning, of course, and prevent further injury to Giannis. But Giannis reportedly has refused, and he wants to play once he's able to play. In terms of Giannis's future, Tom, is this story a big deal?
No, it's not a big deal because this has been the story. There's nothing. Nothing has changed, Kevin. You were out ahead of this story. It's just like it's the same story we've been talking about for months, Kevin. Months. This has been the story. Is he's at odds with the front office and he wants to play and all this stuff. And there's nothing new to this story. So I'm going to say no big deal. And I don't know how this was leaked publicly or how this got to reporters, but it's getting so tiresome. This Giannis doesn't want to be the bad guy routine that it's come all the way around. You know, the horseshoe effect politically is that you're so far on one end of the spectrum that now you're going on the other side where is I don't want to be a bad guy routine as horseshoe to being the bad guy. You know, it's just, I'm tired of it. I saw the headline. I was like, please, Kevin, let's not talk about this tomorrow. And you gave me the list of the topics for today's show and you didn't have Giannis on it. I was like, yay, we don't have to address this. But no, it's no big deal because it's been the same story for months.
Yeah, I'm right there. I'm right there with you. Copy and paste all of our prior commentary on Giannis Antetokounmpo to right now. That the horseshoe effect is a perfect way to put it. Another thing that I didn't put on the list that I sent to you, Jaylen Brown spoke about his leadership in a video posted by Noah Dalzell from Celtics Blog and CLNS Radio. And Jaylen Brown detailed how he memorized the zodiac sign, the numerology, and the star signs of all of his teammates to help him become a better leader. And so I ask you, Tom, is it a big deal that Jaylen Brown is a believer in the zodiac?
I am so out of my depth on zodiac and astrology stuff. I don't know, Kevin, do you know any? I don't. I am so out of my depth on this.
I don't know much about it. I think like I've been on plenty of, like it's more of a woman thing. Like women are very much into horoscopes and the zodiac and numerology and all that. So like of dates I've been on in the past, it comes up. And I think there's a chance there could be something to it. You know, there's a chance. Like we're all as humans, we're stardust, right? You know, we're created from the stars.
Okay,
no, right?
Like, we don't need
and
to.
So like
I have a
just real quick. If you are a believer in God, a creator, in theory, there's a chance the alignment of the sun and the moon could have something to do with dictating how you're created, your personality, how your brain works. If you're a believer like in simulation theory, there's a chance the algorithm and the simulation could have something to do with the alignment of the planets. So I suppose there could be something to the zodiac, but do I dive into it? Do I think it completely dictates your mood and your personality? No. And I also think some of the things Jaylen Brown mentioned, like probably there's contrasting stuff of your stars, your zodiac sign and your numerology and this and that. There's probably contrasting definitions of some of those things when it comes to personality and how to deal with different people. So it's not a big deal, but I do think it was interesting that he was so open about it. He just like laid it all out there.
I'm open to it. I'm open to it. I'm open to being converted. I just say that I am biased on this front because I do have a twin sister and we could not be more different. We were born at the same exact time and we could not be more different. We were from the same gene pool. We could not be more different. Okay. And I love Kim very much. But I've been kind of from the astrology standpoint, I've always been thinking about this from my own experience is just, no one would ever have guessed that we were brother and sister, much less twins, and born on the same day within the same 2 minutes. So I'm open to being converted for all those who are in the chat, just being like, this guy is blasphemous. He's living in the Stone Age. What an idiot. I'm just saying I'm open to being converted, but I just need to get over my personal biases. As a Capricorn, maybe this says something about me. I don't know.
I think you get pretty good evidence in support of your argument there, Tom, being a twin. I gotta say just that. This could be something to it. I don't know. I have no idea. But I thought it was interesting that Jaylen opened up so much about it. And by the way, I'm also not surprised that Jaylen Brown took that perspective. Last thing here, Tom. Are we sure expansion's a good idea? Pacers have lost 15 in a row. Wizards have lost 13 in a row. Nets have lost 5 in a row. They have 24 points in the first half against Oklahoma City on Wednesday night. We saw blowout after blowout. Boston 120-99 over the Warriors. We saw Toronto beat the Bulls by 30. We saw Minnesota without Anthony Edwards beat the Jazz 147-111. We saw the Mavericks lose by 15 to the Hawks. We see blowout after blowout. Only the Grizzlies ruined the tanking teams losing on Wednesday night. It's ugly with the bottom of the NBA right now. And, you know, on social media, to the last 24 hours, I saw a lot of people saying, do we really want to add two more teams to the pile here? Are we sure that we want to do that with Las Vegas and Seattle? I still say yes, because of all the benefits that come as a byproduct of expansion, with perhaps scheduling changes, structuring the calendar year, and improving the overall product. Adding two more teams, to me, doesn't necessarily change anything. I still think there's a lot of depth in the basketball world. There's a lot of good players not getting minutes right now as well across the NBA. So I think these teams that are trying to lose, I'm not letting that influence my perspective on that. Expansion is a good idea, and I would love to see teams in Seattle and, of course, perhaps in Vegas as the second one. What do you think, Tom? Are you still in favor of expansion?
I do if it comes with shortening the season. That's my caveat. If they cut down the number of games by a significant number, I'm not talking 3, 4, 5 games. I'm talking down to 62 or 72 games. I would say you're not going to see the benefit of cutting games unless you get down to 62, right? Where you're playing each team twice, once at home, once on the road. If you're going to do that, I say this is a great idea. But I think Vegas, the tourism, the whole market has completely changed since the kind of rumbles about this happened 5 years ago. And it's a different market than it was. And I dare say that the NBA has been behind on Vegas. The other major sporting leagues are actually way ahead of the NBA on moving their pro teams, moving their teams to Las Vegas. And I kind of feel like there might be some other options, and I'm not hating on Stephen A. Smith's idea about putting a team in Nashville. I disagree that it's Seattle. I would say move the team from Vegas to Nashville rather than the team from Seattle. I'm not big on expansion because
two teams in Tennessee. You can't have the Grizzlies and a team in Nashville. I don't think that's doable.
I don't know. I feel like Vegas wouldn't be my first option if you're going to expand by two teams. I wouldn't do. Maybe 10 years
if anything,
ago, I would have said.
If anything, you should move Memphis to Nashville and still add two expansion teams. I mean, if anything, but like Memphis is such a tiny market. I can see the argument for that, but they also have a really small, passionate fan base. But then you see how empty the crowd is, and when tickets cost $8 and nobody's buying tickets. Like, so it's a big problem.
You know, it's a good idea for the owners that are getting $500 million checks from the fees, from the expansion fees, and the players are seeing zero of that. So I can see how the players, you're going to probably hear some from LeBron or whomever. Maybe LeBron is going to be quiet because he wants to probably get a piece of whatever expansion comes out. But this is one of those weird stories in the league that I feel like we're all just waiting to see what the draft rules are and what the cap rules are going to be with this. But where I stand on it is I'm not thrilled about the idea of adding two teams when we've got so much backwash in the NBA schedule right now. You talked about the blowouts, Bam Adebayo's 83. It's March 19th, Kevin. We've got another month of this. You think it's bad now? Just wait in a few more weeks. I mean, the Blazers were playing the Indiana Pacers last night, and the Blazers at one point were on pace for like 40 offensive rebounds because the Pacers were just like, they missed a shot. Okay, maybe I'll go get it. They had 34 second chance points in that one, and it was like, man, that's March 18th the Indiana Pacers are playing with that. And Zubats, he got a goose egg on his forehead from an elbow just in traffic, and he might not play for a while here. And I just... It's mid-March. The season doesn't end for another month.
He's out for the year, Tom. Out for the year. He's done.
I wouldn't be surprised, man. And look, I think this is a good idea if they make some serious reform on the schedule. And I know that's a very hot topic. And I really like a lot of the people that believe that reducing the schedule would do nothing. And I couldn't be in more disagreement. I think that the NBA would solve a host of their problems if they decided to take a cutback on short-term revenue for the long-term benefit of making every game feel so much bigger and getting rid of back-to-backs. It's not going to solve every problem. Oh. But I don't like the idea that perfection, we're all looking for the perfect solve. It's not, there are issues with lowering the game from 80, season from 82 to 62. I'm not saying it's perfect, but I won't let perfection be the enemy of progress. And I'm saying that if this expansion comes with a 62 game schedule, I am all for it.
It's too many games, and I don't care about the too many games in terms of, oh, it's like such a hard game, they play so fast. I'm less concerned about like the Steve Kerr perspective, and I know you kind of share those thoughts as well, Tom. To me, it's just like purely from an entertainment standpoint. One of my favorite seasons ever watching basketball was the lockout season, the 66-game regular season back, 2011, 2012? It was 66 games. Every game felt super important watching. That was when I was still a hardcore Celtics fan. This is the peak of the Heatles. And like every game felt like it mattered so much more because there was only 66 compared to 82. So just that difference made a big one. Never mind if it's a balanced schedule with you playing every team twice. So 31 other opponents, you face them twice, 62 games. Then you have an NBA Cup and you still have the play-in tournament. So you're getting to mid-60s games. I think the product would improve because games would matter more, and then that would therefore lead to more revenue, more interest, more seats, more fans in seats at games, more people watching at home instead of just scrolling Instagram or the YouTube highlights that the NBA uploads to catch up on games. I think you see more interest. So I'm heavily in favor of that, and I hope to God Adam Silver pushes hard, stomp your foot down and be the commissioner, be the boss, and push for some changes that dramatically improve the quality of this entertainment product. By the way, talking about entertainment, World Baseball Classic, single elimination once they get to the knockout round. March Madness starting today as we speak, single elimination. There's something to that. And I think if you're talking about expanding the NBA Cup, right now, which is like, whatever. Put all 32 teams in there. 32 teams, bring them in there. Single elimination tournament mid-year. That's a big cash cow for you as well. So, hey, there's a free idea for you, Adam Silver. Just go to 32 teams for the NBA Cup and make that the full first half of the year from October through December. That's a topic for another day. I'm sure we'll learn a lot more about expansion when the Board of Governors meeting happens by the end of this month. Tom, real quick, final thing. Who's your prediction to win the national title? Who's going to win March Madness?
I've got my doppelganger's kids winning it all. The Duke Blue Devils are going to win it all. My final four, I've got Duke against Florida. I know, big whoop on that. And Purdue and Michigan. So I'm not the biggest college basketball guru, but I do know that Cam Boozer is the best player in college basketball, and I expect them to go all the way.
Well, I got Duke winning it all over Michigan. I also got Arizona and Illinois in the final four. Illinois is a bit of a long shot. But hey, I don't want all ones and twos. I don't want all ones and twos in the final four. So very exciting. Can you tell? Very exciting.
Yeah, I want to ask you about the big from Michigan. I love that guy, Ade Mara. Yeah, yeah, Mara.
Yeah, he's, I don't know how to pronounce it. Seven foot two. He is posting the highest assist percentage for a big at 7 foot two or taller since Roy Hibbert at Georgetown back in 2008. So he is a passer. He is a rim protector. He's a finisher. He's a post player. I wish he had the 3-point shot like it felt like he had at Spain when he first went to UCLA as a freshman. But he has everything else. I mean, you see the Zach Edey value in Memphis. Mara's not quite as beefy as Edey coming out of Purdue after 4 years, but I might have Mara ranked in my lottery. Oh, I love him too. He's just so fun. I love that Michigan team. I hope they make a long run. I know they're kind of for the college heads right now, Michigan's kind of, people have soured on them a bit. They're like, I'm pretty sure I was the only person on the Yahoo Sports panel. We did a live show on Sunday after Selection Sunday. And I'm pretty sure I was the only one that had Michigan in my Final Four, and they're all college heads. Fitz, yeah. King, and Dallin Cuff. And but I like picking teams with prospects. That's what I do. Those are the teams teams of NBA.
I think we're in the same. I went into your bracket group, so my picks are out there if anyone wants to go check them out. So I have McNeese State making a run, a Cinderella run, but it's pretty chalky, and I think most people are going pretty chalky this year, right?
Yeah, it does seem like that. It does seem like a lot of people are going chalk right now. I was texting with one of my buddies about that this week. He's like, "Hey, any sleepers?" I'm like, not really. I don't really see any like 9-16 seeds. And I'm like, yeah, I feel really good about their odds of making a run. I don't know. It's always random. There's always could be a true Cinderella story, but I wouldn't fault anybody for picking, you know, chalk ones and twos at the top. I mean, even having Illinois as a three, it's not that hot of a take to have Illinois in the Final Four. They could get hot. They have one of the best offenses in all of the nation. So who knows with how long they could go if they just get really hot offensively. I'm excited. March Madness. We got a lot on this podcast with the draft this month. I'm looking forward to talking more about that. Tom, I'm sure you and I might touch on that a little bit next Thursday as well when we're live again on YouTube. 1 week from today, you get the big number on Wednesday. Anything else you get going on this weekend besides Blazers games? What are you doing?
I've got a big fundraiser tomorrow for Hoops for ALS. We're launching a beer on Friday.
Awesome.
Here at Resident Culture in Charlotte, one of the best breweries in America. And we're doing a big ALS fundraiser tomorrow. So that's going to be really fun. And that's on Friday. And then, Top Chef is in full swing, so I'm double dutying on that. So, man, it's a really fun time in the Haberstroh household. So, yeah, very excited to do this again next week, and I can't wait to go watch some March Madness right now.
Hell yeah, Tom. Same here. I got a birthday thing on Friday that I'm going to for one of my longtime buddies since high school. And other than that, I'm just going to be in front of the TV, in front of my old three-monitor setup here, watching college basketball. That's what I'm going to be doing. And I'm sure a lot of you guys watching and listening to my podcast are going to be doing that as well. So thank you guys for tuning in. Tom and I will be back live again on YouTube 1 week from today on YouTube. And of course, you can listen to the podcast everywhere you can find podcasts. So thank you guys for watching us live, and talk to you next week.